I don't know if you're counting on having a Bhakti Riksha class on Friday as well as today. This is it. This is Friday Bhakti Riksha class on Tuesday? Okay. So, I'm going to cover the next verse of Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 9, text 34, and page 441. And the verse is a verse that many of you already know. And the rest of you that don't already know it, you'll know it by the end of tonight. Very important verse. In fact, it's such an important verse that Krishna speaks it, at least the first part of the verse, twice in Bhagavad Gita. It's the only verse that Krishna speaks twice. The last verse of chapter 9, and in the final verse, chapter 18, text number 65, page number 748 of Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 18, text 65. They both begin the same. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. The last two lines are slightly different. In chapter 9, it's mam evaishasi yuktvaivam atmanam matparayana. Being completely absorbed in me, surely will come to me. And the last two phrases in text 65, mam evaishasi satyam te pratijani priyosi me. Thus you will come to me without fail. It's saying the same thing in different language. Surely you will come to me, I promise that you will come to me without fail. Same thing. Chapter 9 comes right in the middle of Bhagavad Gita because there's 18 chapters. And the last verse of chapter 9, it's like holding, you know, putting your finger right in the middle of the whole of Bhagavad Gita and balancing it. Like holding up a plate or a bowl or something, some object. Right in the middle. The end of the middle chapter. There's another nine chapters and the previous nine chapters, and this is right in the middle. And it's so... Another way of saying the same thing is it's the most confidential part of the most confidential knowledge. It's the essence of the message of Bhagavad Gita. Confidential knowledge is to understand the nature of the soul distinct from the body. And more confidential knowledge is to understand there's a supreme soul that's distinct from the individual soul that's within the same body. The kingdom of God is within you. God, the form of the Lord, is within the heart. And not only within the heart, but within the heart of the soul. You follow that? Within the heart of the soul. So what's the size of the soul? It's the size of the atom, practically. 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. You can't even say it's that small. It's smaller than that small. The soul is just a tiny particle. And within the heart of that soul is the supreme soul. Math doesn't work. At least spatially, it doesn't work. Because within the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the second canto, second chapter, there's a chapter called The Lord of the Heart, and it's describing the process of meditation of the yogis who are fixing their mind on the form of Paramatma within the heart. And it's said that he's about the size of a thumb. So one of my godbrothers, Sachi Sutta, he asked Prabhupada, how is it that Paramatma is the size of the thumb and the soul is 1/10,000 the tip of the hair and Paramatma is within the heart of the soul? Srila Prabhupada, how does that work? And Prabhupada's answer was, what is the difficulty? He just repeated, the soul is 1/10,000 the tip of a hair, and the soul is the size, the super soul is the size of a thumb. So Sachi Sutta thought Prabhupada didn't understand his question. So the conversation went on, and at the end of the conversation he asked the same question. He got the same answer. Prabhupada did understand his question. And it's part of Krishna's achintya shakti, his inconceivable potency, that which is not materially possible is possible. That is to say, his form being of such a height is not a material height, it's to give us some idea, but it's not, he's confined. It's like the notion that people that say God can't have form, because if he has form, then you're limiting the unlimited, because form is limiting. So God can't have form. But the form that God has is not like ours. Ours is like his. Man is created in the image of God, it says in the Bible. Not that we create God in our image by imagination. We look like this, so he must look like we look like. That's called anthropomorphism. Imagining God to be like man. Or creating an idea of God that's like man. Those of you that are way back, why don't you come on in? Those are in the front, come forward. This is one of our rituals. Those that are in the front, come forward. Those that are way in the back, take their place. Look at this. We have some two wall seats right over here. They're coming back. Yeah, you think they're coming back? Yeah, I don't know about that.
We'll see.
I don't think so. Oh, that's much better. Sampath, come on right up front. You like front row seats. Dhruv, you coming or are you going to disappear? Okay, that's Dhruv's seat. Come up. Come up, Sampath. Come. Very good. Okay, fantastic. We're all set. Okay. One big happy family. Okay. So anthropomorphism. Anthropomorphism. So imagining God to be like us. But it's not that. Man is created in the image of the Creator who created us. So we have form because he has form. But his form is not material. Material is limiting. Spiritual, there's no limit. There's form and formless, and neither of them are limiting. They're fully spiritual. So that's confidential knowledge, to recognize within the heart of the individual soul, there's a supreme soul, Atma and Paramatma, the soul and the supreme soul, both dwelling within the heart of every living being, not just human beings, but everything that's alive, a bird, an animal, a tree, fish, insect, plant, microbe, there's an individual, wherever there's life, there's an individual soul and the Supreme Soul. That's more confidential knowledge. And most confidential knowledge is the relationship between them. So Krishna ends the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita by declaring to Krishna, to Arjuna, that the best means of understanding that relationship of the individual soul and the Supreme Soul is through the linking process of yoga. Some tried this, that, the other thing, but Arjuna, yoga is best. And then he says, of all types of yoga, there's one amongst them that's the best, the topmost yoga, Uttama yoga. And that's devotional service. It's qualified devotional service. Devotional service with faith. Shraddhavan. Shraddha means faith. Van means to possess. Shraddhavan. Bhajate yo mam. Mam is first person singular. They worship me. Engage in my devotional service with faith. That's the best of all systems of yoga. So then Krishna begins this middle section of Bhagavad Gita saying, I'm now going to describe to you how to. Devotees like the how-to questions. So Krishna's giving the how-to answer even before Arjuna asks how to. Hey, I'm going to explain to you how to. Have your mind always fixed upon me. Be engaged fully in my devotional service. I'm going to explain how to do that, Arjuna. And then through the ninth chapter, the most confidential knowledge is distinguishing mixed from unmixed bhakti. Bhakti can be mixed with fruitive intention. I want something. Just like the little skit that the kids put on in Gita Nagari. Mm. They didn't even say what they want, just I want something. We each have our somethings. It's something. I want something. That's fruitive intention. And another is mental speculation. I want to figure things out through my own capacity. Searching for the sun with a flashlight. Where's the sun? Where's the sun? It's not how you find the sun. The sun is self-luminous. One doesn't require a flashlight to find the sun. Similarly, the absolute truth is self-luminous, is the enlightened soul can see the truth, and an enlightened soul can illumine another soul. It can help one see the truth. Tattvadarshi can help one see the truth and impart knowledge. So, ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is distinguishing mixed from unmixed devotion. And then this verse, 9:34, is the conclusion of the whole confidential knowledge, you can say. The most confidential part of the most confidential knowledge. So, let's recite the verse together. It's a nice verse.
Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam hi vaishasi yuktvaivam atmanam madparayanaha.
We'll do one more time so everyone gets the page.
Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam hi vaishasi yuktvaivam atmanam madparayanaha.
That was good. Can anybody say it without looking at the book? Yes, go ahead.
Manmana bhava mad bhakto
Fantastic. Anyone else? How about one of the kids? One of the older kids. One whose name starts with an R. Do you know the verse?
Oh, I
go ahead. Fantastic. All right. Translation. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, and worship me, becoming completely absorbed in me. Surely you will come to me. I'm going to read the purport that Srila Prabhupada wrote. In this verse, it is clearly indicated that Krishna consciousness is the only means of being delivered from the clutches of this contaminated material world. Sometimes unscrupulous commentators, he doesn't mention any names, but those of us that know what those commentators had to say, we know which ones he's referring to. I'll tell a little story. And then I'll read it again so you can see how he's being gentle in the purport. But when Prabhupada was in India and he received from his spiritual master the instruction, go to the English-speaking parts of the world, take this message of Lord Chaitanya, message of pure devotion, and deliver it to them. In so doing, it'll be good for you and good for them at the same time. So he was preparing himself. And to prepare himself, he was making translation and commentary on the first canto Bhagavatam, which was printed. He also had a transcript for printing Bhagavad Gita, translation and commentary. But it wasn't printed yet, just the transcript. When he came to America, he brought his first canto Bhagavatam set in, you know, those nice metal trunks that you buy in Vrindavan. And took them on the steamship and brought them with him. When he was in New York, he was wishing to have his Bhagavad Gita commentary published, but someone stole the transcript. It was like a very unfortunate circumstance. A crazy person stole the transcript. So he had no transcript. So he had to prepare another transcript. Other translation of Bhagavad Gita. So meanwhile, he sent the devotees, so I can teach Bhagavad Gita to you. Find a translation of Bhagavad Gita somewhere in the bookstore or library. Bring that. So they found one. I won't mention the name. And Prabhupada went to this verse, and then he went to the next verse, or 1866, where, what's 1866? Where Krishna says, Sarvadharmam Prityaja Mamekam Sharanam, abandon all varieties of religion, religiosity, and surrender unto me. The commentary says, don't surrender unto Krishna. Surrender to the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna. That's what Krishna means. And Prabhupada made a fist with his hand and banged it on the table and said, just see what he's doing, and read it again. Krishna says, surrender unto me. Commentary, don't surrender unto Krishna. Surrender to something else. Just see what he's doing. And he did, read it again. And same with Manmana, don't think of Krishna, think of something else. Prabhupada said, this is unscrupulous. If he wants to write his own ideology, his own theology, then take another title. Don't call it Bhagavad Gita. But if you're going to take Krishna's words, don't say Krishna didn't know what he meant to say. What he really meant to say was something what he didn't say. If Krishna doesn't know what he means to say, then why quote him? But Krishna knows what he means to say, and he means to say what he says, and he says what he means to say. Surrender unto me. First person singular, aham. Or manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. So, sometimes unscrupulous commentators distort the meaning of what is clearly stated here, that all devotional service should be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Unfortunately, unscrupulous commentators divert the mind of the reader to that which is not at all feasible. Such commentators, he leaves out the word unscrupulous, do not know that there is no difference between Krishna's mind and Krishna. Krishna is not an ordinary human being. He is the absolute truth. His body, his mind, and he himself are one and absolute. It is stated in Kurma Purana, as it is quoted by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami in his Anubhashya commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita, 5th chapter, Adi Leela, etc. Deha dehi vibhedho yam neshvare vidyate kvachit. This means that there's no difference in Krishna, the Supreme Lord, between himself and his body. Deha means body, and dehi is one who is embodied. For us, there's a difference. There's a soul that's within the body. There's a soul that's within the body. But for Krishna, there's not inside and outside. The soul that's within the body. No, doesn't apply to Krishna. Dehi, deha, vibhedho. There's no difference between the inside and outside. There is no difference. So there's no surrendering to something inside Krishna. Something inside Krishna, surrender to Krishna. Surrender to Krishna means surrender to Krishna. Not something else. But because the commentators do not know the science of Krishna, they hide Krishna and divide his personality from his mind or from his body. Although this is sheer ignorance of the science of Krishna, some men make a profit out of misleading people. And he's not finished. Next paragraph. There are some who are demonic. They also think of Krishna, but enviously, just like King Kamsa, Krishna's uncle. Kamsa was Krishna conscious. He always thought of Krishna. When is Krishna going to kill me? Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Let me kill Krishna before Krishna kills me. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So he was Krishna conscious, but not favorable Krishna consciousness. So bhakti is think of Krishna, but manmana bhava mad bhakto. Think of Krishna and become Krishna's devotee. Think of Krishna favorably, how to please Krishna. One should always be thinking of Krishna in devotional love. That is bhakti. One should cultivate knowledge of Krishna continuously. What is that favorable cultivation? It is to learn from a bona fide teacher. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have several times explained that his body is not material, but is eternal blissful knowledge. This kind of talk about Krishna, Krishna Katha, will help one become a devotee, understanding Krishna. Otherwise, from the wrong source, will prove fruitless. And how do you always think of Krishna? Next paragraph. One should therefore engage his mind in the eternal form. The primal form of Krishna. Now there's a whole chapter that's dedicated to this sentence, where chapter 12, coming later, Arjuna following, because this is the chapter 12 is the final chapter of the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, like, you know, the Krishna's holding Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand holding up the whole hill. That's this verse. The whole of Bhagavad Gita is resting on this verse. But the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita have as its conclusion the question Arjuna asks Krishna, what's the best way to think of you? In your personal feature or your impersonal feature? Very direct question. Krishna gives a very direct answer. Thinking me in my personal feature is best. What about those who try to think of the impersonal feature of the Supreme? Krishna says two things. Very difficult. For those who are embodied, that's us, soul within the body, because how do you fix your mind on that which has no form, no quality, no personality, no characteristics, all pervasive, no beginning and no end? How do you even think of something that has no beginning and no end? What's an infinity sign look like? I'm looking at you. I don't know your name. What's an infinity? You like doing things with your hands. Make an infinity sign. Do you know how to do that? Like this? Right? You follow? So, that's the infinity sign. Where does it begin and where does it end? You can't say where it begins and where it ends because it's infinity. No beginning. So how do you fix your mind on that? Very difficult. That which has no beginning and no end. That which has no qualities. That which has no form. It's very difficult. That's one of the reasons. The second reason is, it's only your effort, whereas with the bhakti process, it's your effort plus Krishna's helping you. The math is easy. That's better. So Krishna says it's better. The other is very troublesome and practically impossible. So fixing your mind on Krishna, manmana, means fixing your mind on his transcendental form and qualities and activities. His loving associates, the activities he does with those loving associates. There are hundreds and thousands of temples in India for the worship of Krishna, and devotional service is practiced there. When such practice is made, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. You know what namaskuru means? You know what namaskar means? You've heard that phrase. Yeah, okay.
Oh, it means, isn't that a greeting or something?
It's a greeting, but it's a particular kind of greeting.
Verbal? No,
yeah, besides verbal. It's offering respect. Yeah, you can do with the palms of your hand and then say namaskar. But it means something, not just like Hari Bol, you know. That means something too. Chant the holy name. But namaskar means I offer my obeisances to you. Very nice. Nice greeting. So, mam namaskuru. Our obeisances are meant for Krishna. When going to the temples, we offer our obeisances before the deity in the temple. One should lower his head before the deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. That will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. This will help one transfer to Krishna Loka. That's the rest of the verse. Mam evaishashi yuktvaivam. Atmanam matparayana. Mam evaishashi yuktvaivam. Thus absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. One should not be deviated by unscrupulous commentators. Boy, Prabhupada is really cautioning us 5 times so far in one purport. One must engage in the 9 different processes of devotional service. beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna. Because Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, then your mind will go to Krishna by proper hearing and chanting from scrupulous commentators, not the other kind. Pure devotional service is the highest attainment of human society. Okay. The process of always thinking of Krishna, manmana, it's the fruit of proper hearing and chanting, shravanam, kirtanam, hearing and chanting. It's actually the natural consciousness of the soul. It's not that kind of remembrance that by saying something again and again and repetition again and again and again and again and again and again and again, and just like you embed it in your memory. It's not that kind of remembrance. Some of my, Sridhar Swami, a god brother who's now deceased, he used to, right in the middle of a Bhagavatam class, he'd start saying a jingle that he heard when he was a kid, a television commercial jingle, and say, you know, my mind is contaminated because as a little child I heard all these things and they're still there. And every now and then they just like come out. So who knows what today's children are carrying around and later is going to come out because something, watched television or heard it in school so many times or something. It's not that kind of recall. Just like hear it again and again and again. It's another kind of remembering. It's remembering our original consciousness. The hearing of Krishna Katha and the chanting of Krishna Katha and Krishna's name and Krishna's qualities and Krishna's pastimes and hearing and chanting, it awakens within the soul the original consciousness of the soul. It's like a match that's in a matchbox. Of course, now we have so many other things for lighting fires, but there's a matchbox and you open up the box and you take a match out and close the box, move the match across the striker, a fire comes out because you took the match and created enough heat across the match side and the fire comes out. So it's stored fire and it's in the matchbox. You got a box full of fire, but it's safe because it's stored. But don't put it right next to the stove because it might ignite just from heat. Same was this, put it across the striker. So the same, the process of Krishna Katha, it awakens the now dormant Krishna consciousness. It's already there. It's already there. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, Sadhya Kalbunoi, Shravanadi. Beginning with hearing, or shravana adi. Adi means etc. Beginning with hearing, plus chanting, remembering, and so forth and so on. The nine processes of bhakti. Beginning with shravana, that Krishna prema becomes awakened. And an aspect of this Krishna prema is always think of Krishna. Where there's love, you always think of the object, the beloved. It's just natural. Prabhupada describes this at somebody at their workplace. They have a little picture of their family or their baby. to remind them why they're at their workplace. Or it used to be, not so much a practice now, but it used to be, and Prabhupada commented on it, sometimes people keep their little baby's shoes. And they put their little baby's shoes someplace where they'll see those little baby shoes. When I was a kid, people would put it on their rear view mirror in their car. So as they're driving their car to work, they see the baby shoes swinging back and forth. Now it's all kinds of other things. Air fresheners and CDs and gooey monsters and but and Prabhupada's comment was, when they see the shoes, they don't just see the shoes, they see their child. We thought, you know, they, in their mind's eye, the thought of their child is awakened by seeing little baby shoes. Now the child could be, you know, big, but they see, they feel by being reminded of the child. So one who is Krishna conscious, just by seeing that which is in relation to Krishna, like Srimati Radharani, when she would see a dark monsoon cloud, she'd go mad seeing in her mind's eye, seeing Krishna. Or she'd see a dark tree, a tamal tree, and she'd go and embrace the tamal tree, thinking separation from Krishna in her madness of love for Krishna. Seeing that which reminds one of Krishna, if one has attachment for Krishna, takes the mind directly to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, when he saw in Jagannath Puri, he saw a sand dune by the ocean, big pile of sand that had just been blown up by the wind. But when he saw the sand dune, he thought of Govardhan Hill, and when he thought of Govardhan Hill, his mind went to Govardhan Hill, and when his mind went to Govardhan Hill, he saw Krishna, and he ran toward the sand dune like the wind. The other associates couldn't keep up with him. He was running so swiftly to Krishna. And his arms outstretched, he fell to the ground unconscious in anticipation of being united again with Krishna, embracing Krishna. That's in a very advanced stage, very advanced stage, but in principle, just from the process of hearing and chanting, one can think of Krishna naturally. Naturally, it awakens the dormant consciousness of the soul, like the fire coming out of the match when you put it on the striker. Our Krishna consciousness is natural. So the process that's being described in Bhagavad Gita, and the goal that's being described in Bhagavad Gita, it's a natural process and a natural goal. The means, the process, is hearing. Hearing these messages about Krishna or spoken by Krishna, either way. That's Krishna Katha. That sense of being the tiny spark side by side with Krishna within the body, we're meant for serving him, become his devotee, worship him, offer obeisances to him. In this way, we'll attain Krishna's abode. Surely, this is his reassurance, his promise. And Krishna keeps his promises to his devotees. So we follow the process and reach the goal, and this most confidential knowledge chapter of Bhagavad Gita is concluding with this very nice message. In the 18th chapter, I'll end with this. The 18th chapter, the verse appears again, as we looked and saw. And Krishna's message is the same. You will come to me. And the following verse is sometimes considered the most important verse, or the concluding verse of all of Krishna's message in the whole of Bhagavad Gita. place in the secondary position any other good instruction that you may have received from Scripture and place in the primary position this one, Mam Ekam Sharanam. The goal of all religion is to achieve that, the position of full shelter in Krishna. And when one is fully sheltered in Krishna, everything that is inauspicious is relieved. Whatever reactions to past mistakes or intentional or unintentional misdeeds, it's cleansed by that very powerful shaking shelter of Krishna. Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yishami. And nothing else is needed. And in case one has a doubt, well, what about this or that or the other thing? Ma Suchaha. Don't worry. I give my assurance. You're under my protection directly. Okay. Any discussion? It's a nice, very important verse from Bhagavad Gita.
Maharaj, I heard about remembering at our stage. Remembering, does it also mean, like, for example, we hear from class that Krishna is the taste of water, or Krishna gives the memory and also forgetfulness? So if we, if at certain circumstances we remember that, is that called remembrance also?
Sure. Here's another category. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described. When you're, you may have some favorite prayers or favorite verses that you like. You have some? We all have some. So as you're learning those verses and reciting those verses, that's smaranam, remembrance also. Whether you're going to later formally present it or not. I was just in Los Angeles, and Dravida normally stays in San Diego. Dravida is an editor, a godbrother that I knew from the day he joined our temple in New York. And he was, because he's, anyway, he's very wonderful. He's an amazing devotee. He's always reciting slokas. I mean, always reciting slokas. I don't know what his dreams are like, but every waking moment he's reciting slokas. And it's like very lyrical and melodious and beautiful. And like, you know, he was coming in to pay obeisances at the Vyasasan. I was close enough, I could hear him. It's like, you know, he wasn't ready. He was going to, after he sat down, he started chanting japa, but just walking. He's reciting slokas and reciting slokas and reciting slokas. And it wasn't, you know, for show. It wasn't for entertainment. It's his thought. His thought is just absorbed in wonderful verses. I know where he's going. Back to Godhead. Totally absorbed. Totally absorbed. Naturally. Happily. Absorbed. I remember when he was much younger, he would, you know, everyone would get up at a certain time to attend Mangala Arati. Dravida would have most of his rounds chanted by the time everybody was up to go to Mangala Arati. And then after Mangala Arati, he would sit and he had two instruments. He had a tambura, and he would, like, for 2 hours, while we're chanting japa, he's singing slokas, you know, which the ones that he likes the most. And then this one, that series, another series. Then he had a drone, not the harmonium with a keyboard, but one of those drone things, and would do the same thing. And then he started making recordings, and it was, you know, just not for promoting himself, just so, you know, he could hear all day long. Here we had a situation in Mayapur, I was one time, one of several times, doing the Mayapur Parikrama. Just before the Mayapur festival, we have a 7-day Parikrama where a 1,000 devotees at a time leave Mayapur and don't come back for a week. We go to another place, and just camp out. And then another place and camp out. And it's amazing, all the infrastructure they have for that. So after the first night, we ended up at the Jagannath Mandir. Some of you may know from Mayapur where that is. And where we were going to the next place was to cross one of the tributaries of the Ganga. So we had to cross by boat. And there were 2 boats for 1,000 people. And one of them, the first boat, as they were crossing the boat sank. So all the people in the boat got wet. So there's only 1 boat. And it took a long time to get the 1 boat to get all those 1,000 people to cross the river. It wasn't a big crossing, but we you know, it was enough, you had to have a boat. So on the other side of the river were Prahladananda Swami and Dravida. Dravida would recite from memory the Sanskrit of a whole chapter from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, and Prahladananda Swami would recite the English translation from memory. Now, we didn't have time for a morning Bhagavatam class. We just had those two. And now they did like several chapters from memory. Just some people are gifted in different ways. But, you know, if there's a degree of practice, just like our musicians here, they like to practice. And one may have a gift, but still one has to use the gift. You practice and then becomes like you become good at it. So that's their practice, manmana. Dravida likes Sanskrit slokas. He knows the translations too. One of the things that he's done is he's poeticized the translations so that they rhyme. He's amazing. He's absorbed in Krishna thought. He's got the manmana down. He's absorbed. That's another kind of remembering Krishna. In addition to when you see the sun, you see the moon, see those things that Krishna describes in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, his opulences, you think of Krishna. Anything else? Yes?
When we study scriptures, like, you know, I try to relate it to the practical day, and then I sometimes feel like I'm going towards the direction of speculation. So would you please, you know, tell me, like, how can I overcome the, you know, that obstacle, or like the proper way of, you know, relating.
Your the premise of your question is clear. The last part of your voice went down.
I want to know, like, how I can overcome the tendency, you know, that obstacle of, you know, going into the speculation, and also, like,
well, application is not speculation. Application is application. Speculation is more like this means that, instead of this means this. That's the concern. So how do I apply, like this question here, how do I apply the instruction, always think of Krishna? And so, you know, is this an application of always thinking of Krishna? And I said, yes. And here's another application, and there's others. But make sure it's thinking of Krishna, not thinking of that, of not Krishna. That's speculation. Yes.
Very basic question, but what are the 9 different processes of devotional service?
The which different principles?
The nine.
Hearing about Krishna. Vibrating messages about Krishna, speaking about Krishna, remembering, hearing, chanting, remembering, awakening of that dormant remembrance of Krishna. That's three. Six more to go. So, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam, worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord. As the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, she's always at the lotus feet of Narayana, worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord. You've seen pictures? Okay. That's a type of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam, Archanam, deity worship. Bandhanam, prayer. Offering prayers to the Lord, a type of, or process of, devotional service. Dasyam, rendering service. Just like, you know, the devotees have names. Bayahari Das and Induleka Dasi. Dasa means servant. So, Dasya, rendering service. Sakyam means becoming a friend. Like Arjuna and Krishna were dear most friends. He was a devotee, but he was also Krishna's friend. Sakyam. And Atma Nivedana means dedication of everything. Body, mind, words, everything. Everything dedicated to the Supreme as an expression or form of devotional service. So hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the lotus feet, offering prayers, worshipping the deity form of the Lord, rendering service, becoming a dear friend, surrendering everything. Nine processes. They're presented in Prahlad Maharaj. You know who Prahlad Maharaj is? A little boy, well, maybe a little bigger than that. Small boy, 5 years old, who had a very vicious, nasty, terrible father, who, when his father was terrorizing everybody in the universe because he wanted to become so powerful and control the universe. He was a big guy. And he had a little son who was just the opposite. So Prahlad Maharaj offered those prayers, or answered his father's question, what's the best thing that you've learned? He said, the best thing I've learned is devotional service. And it has nine different processes. So when his father heard that, he was furious. Who's taught you this? Bring the school teachers here. I'm going to finish them. We didn't teach him. We don't know where he learned these things. Anyway, that's where it's presented in the Bhagavatam. Nine processes of bhakti. So in some religious processes, some of those nine are missing. Sometimes some of those nine are especially prominent. But in the within the Srimad Bhagavatam, this especially important are these first two, hearing and chanting, because they lead to naturally to this manmana, always remembering in a natural way, always remembering Krishna. In fact, Prahlad, this little 5-year-old, he achieved spiritual perfection just from remembering, always. Even his father was flipping out. You know, he decided he wanted to kill him, his own son, 5-year-old boy, because he thought about God too much. But he couldn't harm him. He was always protected by this powerful quality the boy had of remembering God, and God protected him because of his pure devotion. He couldn't hurt him. And that made his father even more furious. Where are you getting your power? And Prahlad said, from the same place you are. Okay. Anything else?
Regarding Prahlad Maharaj, I do not understand how he was protected by remembering God always. But that remembrance, I heard that the remembrance does not mean he is seeking help from God, please protect me. But what does that mean?
He was just always thinking of him. He loved him. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Yes. Yes.
About the process of devotional services.
The process of devotional nine.
Yes, nine devotional services.
Which one's your favorite?
My favorite is Kirtanam.
Kirtanam, okay.
Not Kirtanam means not the bhajan and Kirtan. It is about talking about Krishna.
Ah. Okay, so you're going to talk about Krishna. Go ahead.
The question is, out of this process, all of this process, how much of that, how much direct this process should be, or indirect?
Could you explain your question a little bit?
Okay, so when I say direct, it means I'm doing the deity worship or talking about Krishna, or I'm doing all the processes directly in reference to Krishna.
Can you give an example of what you mean by indirect?
Yes.
Like you're in your sleep and you're doing it in your sleep or something?
Not that way, but when I'm talking to somebody, instead of talking to him directly about Krishna, I talk in a roundabout way, thinking that, okay, Krishna is the ultimate goal, but I'll be talking about something more abstract. Is it viable?
Yes. It depends on it depends on several things. It depends upon your capacity. It depends on the circumstance. It depends on the other person. Supposing you're speaking to your supervisor in the workplace. It depends on the circumstance. Supposing you're speaking to a police officer. Supposing you're speaking to like an immigration officer as you're entering immigration station. People ask, how long have you been out of the country? I've been gone for X amount of time. And I went to, where'd you go? I went to the holy place of the land of Krishna, Vrindavan. And they look up from the passport. Oh. So anyway, according to time, place, and circumstance, and so on. So supposing somebody's a medical doctor, or supposing they're a teacher, and according to their professional code of ethics, there's certain things they can and cannot do. So they may be obliged to be indirect. And your question is that okay, or is that all right, or yes, it's all right, according to circumstance and according to the person. If you present too much to someone prematurely, you may do a disservice. They may think, oh, this person's pushy and, I'm getting away from them. And maybe they're right. So, according to time, place, and circumstance. But as much as we can speak, if the circumstance permits, what's appropriate, we have to be to evaluate a bit what's appropriate, and according to what's appropriate, we can speak something. Keep on your screensaver a picture of Krishna, and people will ask you, what's that? Then you can tell them. sometimes devotees may be okay, may not be okay, but they wear tilak to work. People will sometimes ask, what's that? That, you know, you don't have to, but if you do that, that some people do that, and, you know, in India it's common. In America it's maybe, you know, less common, but people do all kinds of other things with their hair. In their heads, and their, you know, tattoos and pieces of metal hanging off their body and stuff. So why not tilak? People will ask, what's that? It's a new tattoo. Yes. Do you wear tilak to work? Have you thought about it? You're bold enough.
I put a water mark.
Huh?
I put a water mark.
And
most of the time I work from home.
Okay. What's your question?
Maharaj, we hear that everything which is in the material world or anything that is there in Krishna also. Like, you know, I was listening to Prabhupada's lecture, he mentioned that the cheating propensity, Krishna also had cheating propensity.
As above, so below. As above, so below.
Yeah. So where does this anxiety and fear and enviness come from? Because Krishna is such a dandelion.
When Krishna sees the stick in Mother Jasoda's hand, he cries and he runs. It's transcendental. As is his stealing, transcendental. Everything is his. What's he stealing? It's his. It's Leela. It's to enjoy pastimes with his devotees. Okay. And it provides a wonderful subject matter for the devotees to hear and chant about. Like our devotee that likes to hear and chant in the back. Kirtan, that kind. Subject matter about Krishna. You've got something. Is it a good one? He's got to edit it now.
This one, like, kind of like, question in my mind. Is there, like why Krishna wants to be, like there is a person, right? Devotee wants devotee Narada to be more humble, like, more humble. But why does Krishna want him to be more humble, like, what's the
he's editing. What's the purpose behind Krishna doing that? It's good for Krishna wants what's good for us. He wants because it's good for us. Or say it in the verse, in the reverse. If we're proud, the opposite of humble, that's bad for us. We suffer because of pride. Krishna wants our well-being. He wants our happiness. He wants us to be relieved of unnecessary suffering. Therefore, Krishna wants us to be in that state that you just described. Very directly, humble. And so he, with those who are very dear to him, he removes their pride. He removed the pride of Indra. What a magnificent way of removing Indra's pride. And about so many others. It's nice. It's a loving gesture. Because Krishna loves his devotee, he doesn't like to see pride in their heart. The gopis became proud. And Krishna left the rasa dance. He just left.
Actually, I have a clarification in connection to
Ajamila's
pastime.
To the which pastime?
Ajamila.
Ajamila pastime.
Like the conversation between Yamadutas and Vishnudutas, like the Yamadutas, they weren't able to recognize who the Vishnudutas were. They knew all in all only Yamaraj as the Lord and everything. Like, is it because of the nature of their service?
Yes. Who has ever stopped death? He's the Lord of death. He's number one. There's no one greater than him. No one stops death. And here came the Vishnu Dutas and they stopped death. Who's that? So they went back to Yamaraj and said, are there two lords? That would be very bad. Because supposing there's two opinions, and then, you know, one opinion prevails, but the other opinion is a contradictory opinion, they're both lords. That'd be really messy. So there's got to be one lord. And we thought that was you. Can you tell us? If you think that we're qualified? So, yes, it's the nature of the service. And they're, you know, but they then got an opportunity to realize beyond their limited understanding, something that's beyond their limited understanding. Okay.
But they weren't directly thinking of Krishna, but
they were in service of Yamaraj.
Yeah, the service of Krishna.
And that's the scope of what they could see. They didn't see beyond that. They didn't have the capacity. Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, you got something.
I was just trying to reconcile. So at this point, Krishna says and Prabhupada says in the purport of, you know, thinking but favorably. And in the seventh canto, Bhagavatam, Narad Muni actually answers Yudhishthira Maharaj, and he gives, comes to the example, saying that even thinking unfavorably, Kamsa attained perfection.
Well, he didn't achieve the same perfection that Arjuna did. He got released from his sinful reactions, but he didn't achieve spiritual perfection the same way that Arjuna did. Those who are those whose sins are neutralized by being killed by Krishna, they're released of all their sins, but their devotion for Krishna is not yet awakened. So their destination is not the same as those whose devotion is fully awakened. Sayuja Mukti is there for those whose devotion is not awakened, but their sins are neutralized. Okay, thank you all very much on a Tuesday night. Look at all this. You knew it was very nice prasadam, and you knew that it was Bayahari's birthday, right? Today's Bayahari's birthday, and there's a nice birthday cake. You know that? I know you know it's your birthday. There's a cake. Happy birthday to you.
There is another devotee who comes to now, but it's her birthday too today.
It's your birthday also?
Yes.
Today?
Yes.
Oh, happy birthday.